Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded July 16th, 2025. Well, following a quarter century of wars and preparation for more of the same, disillusionment with what can now only be ironically called Western civilization has never been greater. Tears in our societal fabric, once visible only to those scholars and critics and watchers confined to the margins, have grown into great rents, obvious to all but the most obtuse or those too invested in a rotten status quo to recognize their peril. The last 2 years of Israel's genocide come 21st century Holocaust have quickened the unraveling as the established order has colluded with the destruction of Palestine. In Canada, all parties in Parliament have supported the carnage, enabling it continue while allowing arms merchants profit by it. As seen throughout the NATO countries, here and in those places, instead of observing and applying international law, national powers have turned against those calling out the criminals. Eve Engler is an activist and author, disruptor, parent, and practitioner of political conscience. Eve's written a dozen books and countless essays detailing Canada's long history of perfidious foreign policies. His interventions with public officials are legendary, as is his stalwart defense of the universal principles of humaneness. Now, Eve is taking the battle further, announcing last week his challenge for the vacant seat at the head of the New Democratic Party. Eve Engler in the first half, and the Hague Group convened in Bogota, Colombia yesterday. The alliance of 30-odd countries is meeting to formulate what concrete actions it can take to curb Israel's genocide of Palestinians. This initiative follows the utter failure of the United Nations and its concomitant judicial appendages to bring an end to the slaughter of civilians seen daily for the past 21 months and more. America and its NATO claque are predictably hostile, with the U.S. promising terrible retribution to come for Hague Group members. Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Dan represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's far-right death squads and has been to the country to witness both elections and the transformative, if still fragile, peace process that has emerged there in the last few years. Dan's book titles include Cancel This Book, The Progressive Case Against Cancel Culture, No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interest, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, and The Plot to Attack Iran, How the CIA and the Deep State Have Conspired to Vilify Iran. Dan Kovalik and the Hague Group filling the justice gap for Palestine in the second half. But first, Eve Engler's fight to lead a revival of Canada's remnant left. Welcome back to the show, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure. Of course, now, Eve, you've been a fervent critic of the NDP's foreign policy for many years. You and I have talked about it right here for many years. Now the party's Socialist Caucus has canvassed your participation in the leadership race of that party. Is, firstly, their invitation enough to get you on the ballot?
No, it isn't. There will ultimately be a whole bunch of money that needs to be raised to be formally part of the race. $100,000 needs to be raised but needs to be given to the party to get on the ballot. And there's also some form of a vetting process that also needs to be that will need to take place. And there's other rules about signing up a certain number of members and getting signatures from a certain number of members and stuff like that. Things that I think are maybe less difficult, but no, there's a series of things that are necessary, including this very large amount of money to partake in the leadership, formally partake in the race. But the money thing comes a bit later into the process.
Well, $100,000, that's not socialist money, not at all. And it's gone up from their last go around from $30,000 required of those that would run for the leadership, which I think is quite a lot to begin with. It's a deterrent from frivolous people, you know, coming on. But I think $10,000 would probably serve that purpose well enough. $100,000, that seems like that they want Rockefellers and Astors and the like to be running for the leadership of this party.
Yeah, and I believe it's, I saw a number, I think in 2012, it was only 15,000. So they bumped it up to 30,000 in 2017. And if you look at the NDP has significantly fewer MPs than they did in those two previous races. So as the party has fewer MPs, they are making it harder and harder to participate in the leadership race. This has the effect of drastically curtailing the parameters of debate and the wide-ranging nature. It's obviously an anti-grassroots, anti-working class, a decision to put such a high fee. But whether that ends up being the principal obstacle to participating or not, it's not clear at this point. I think that there's a lot of people in the party structure that would like to try to block my candidacy just by vetting it out, and obviously the high financial target is another. I don't think that's just targeted at me. It's partly targeted at me, but it's, I think, just a broader policy of curtailing the range of debate within the leadership race.
But it's, they do have a, as far as the 100,000 goes, they have a helpful payment plan. You can do it on installments. How does that work?
We don't know the exact details of what that's going to be. They've just announced it. They haven't said like what the dates will be. I believe I've seen discussed three different installments. So, the race won't start until formally start until September. So maybe, 6 weeks, 2 months in, there'll be, 33,000, and then another 6 weeks, 2 months later, another 33,000, and then a final one. I think that the dynamic for me personally, it will be the first one to get that money will be difficult. I think if we're able to get past the first threshold, that it will kind of take on a life of its own. The effort to just try to sabotage the candidacy right from the get-go is a real obstacle that the leadership probably wants to pursue, and then that would be the biggest obstacle. Then the second obstacle is getting the first installment of these resources. But if those two were passed, I would assume we would attain the final threshold, and then of course, winning the race would be difficult. It would be, but not impossible. Also, I also think that there are to get 20,000, 25,000 people to become NDP members to pay either the $5 fee or the normal membership fee, which is a bit higher than that. It's going to be higher than that. I think they exist. The one I just say no to kind of support for the Holocaust in Gaza. There's a lot of people who are very angry at the forces in this country that have been promoting just slaughter, endless slaughter in Gaza, and then playing victim. So I think that there is a lot of hostility there. It's obviously hard to reach everyone. And I also think that what's happening with the military spending stuff is just so out of control, where Mark Carney is paying ever more to supposedly mollify Donald Trump in terms of military spending. And that's increasingly going to become obvious that that's a huge attack against social programs and social entitlements. And that there's going to be increased criticism from public sector unions, from sort of more mainstream left organizations towards the whole kind of military machine. I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And I think when it comes to the question of Canada's support for apartheid, genocide, Israel, and the Canadian military, I have better credentials and better knowledge of those two issues than pretty much anyone else. So, obviously you'll see that some of these NDP candidates who've been very much aligned with NATO, they'll probably shift their rhetoric and they'll take up a bit more of an anti-warish kind of rhetoric. But the credibility on those issues is not very strong, certainly with Heather McPherson, who has been the foreign affairs critic of the past 4 years, who is a total NATO hawk. So it's not it's it's a it's a serious it would be very difficult to succeed, of course, but it's doable.
It's not just the leadership structure in the NDP that is perhaps a little bit worried about your candidacy. You wrote an article at your website, evangler.com, campaign success, genocide lobby totally freaked out, where a lot of non-NDP members started teeing off on you and your announced candidacy from the such left leftist incubators as the Globe and Mail and the formerly Left Toronto Star, and none other than Myron Baloney's offspring, Ben or Men Baloney, going off on you and trying to make you look bad. Do you want to talk about some of the other resistance that you've encountered in the media to your candidacy?
Yeah, there's just been a whole backlash from, like, you know, Ben Mulroney was one of the more extreme, but the Western Standard front page U.S. one, right wing U.S. one, hit pieces, and then there's been also a whole online push to have me excluded from the race from people like Mayor Weinstein, the former head of the Jewish Defense League, and Brian Lilly, the columnist at the Toronto Sun, and Selena Robinson, the disgraced anti-Palestinian NDP BC cabinet minister. One of the conservative MPs, the immigration critic, Rempel, she came out and said I should be, basically said I should be excluded from the race. So there is this backlash. I see this as beneficial.
Hey, but you didn't mention my favorite one, Sue Ann Levy, who says, "Hey, quote, hey, pasty face, you forgot the part in your bio about being a member of the Hitler Youth. How old are you, anyway?"
I'm 46. So I don't.
And your face, is it pasty? I thought you looked like you had a tan the last time I saw you.
She's repeated this Hitler Youth thing a couple of times, and I've been a lawyer's got in touch with me about suing her for defamation. So we are looking into that, because I don't know where she's pulling this from, but she's clearly doubled down on this claim.
Well, she writes for the Toronto Sun, so I guess that might explain some of it. But I mean, but what, as you say, and as you start that article, with enemies like these, one needs fewer friends. Yeah, who needs friends at all? These guys are doing all the heavy lifting for you. What about drawing membership? Now, you said there was a membership aspect of all this. Do you mean like you have to sign up new members to the NDP, or get current members to support you, or some combination of the both?
Yeah, it would some combination of the two. I think the only shot of having any, you know, serious kind of play here is to get 10, 20,000, 30,000 new members, right? As a general rule, I think there's be a decent number of current members who are sympathetic, but generally it would be by inspiring a lot of people to have a voice that is an unabashed challenge to capitalism and imperialism, that puts forward calls for decolonization, degrowth, economic democracy, that puts forward bold, you know, big picture. There is a lot of problems in our society. There, you know, wealth inequality, ecological collapse, and then simultaneously horrors that we're seeing every day from Gaza, Canada enabling that. And then, you know, we're going to put a bunch more money. We're going to give these monsters who've been enabling the genocide in Gaza, we're going to give them a whole bunch more money to more resources to be able to wage violence internationally by boosting Canada's military. So that I think there are tens and tens of thousands of people who are appalled by the state of political affairs, who could potentially become members. But that would be the principal way of having any chance of success. And also, not just I mean, I think it's already in just the writing and some of the stuff that's being done, I'm already being able to shift the tone of the leadership race, which hasn't even formally started. That's already having an impact on what's going to transpire as the tone of the race. But the more that there's a sign that this campaign is serious and we're getting well organized in terms of having, we already have about 100 people who've signed up to volunteer. We've had a very successful first online volunteer meeting. The more we get the basics of the infrastructure organized, and it demonstrates to the other candidates that, whoa, no, there's people who are, you know, supportive, there's something here, it's going to further push them to stake out more, you know, more anti-military, more pro-Palestinian positions, and to be willing to talk about socialism. They're not obviously going to talk about, you know, saying we need to replace capitalism. I don't think that's going to come from any of the, maybe Avi Lewis, if he runs, he might be willing to say that, but not from Heather McPherson or the Nathan Cullen or whoever else from the more establishment part of the wing of the party. But wait,
Nathan Cullen, now he said he's not going to run. He said that explicitly in an op-ed where he also said that there shouldn't even be an NDP convention. Why should we waste the time? I guess Nathan thinks this after the day after, I believe it was, you announced your candidacy.
Yeah, well, I know there's, I don't know if I saw that op-ed of him saying, I thought he was still in the running. I know there was a Toronto Star op-ed where he did, he didn't want a protracted leadership race. I don't actually have a subscription to the Star, so wasn't able to read it. But yeah, well, that's the basics here. I mean, what the high fee. There was a revolt within the federal council where they blocked. There was a push to have a really short race and a push to have a really high fee, and they were able to basically get a bit of a longer race, but they didn't succeed in bringing down the high fee of entry. So there is, the people who run the party want to have as sort of constrained of a debate as possible, and just sort of have a bit of a, I don't know, a bit of a kumbaya, maybe three candidates who all, you know, say nice things about each other and say, oh, I would put a bit more emphasis here and you know, this and that. And I found that already just in raising some of these issues, I get all these people, even people who are, you know, pro-Palestinian, come back and are saying this is like sectarian. You know, to criticize Heather McPherson's repeated meeting with Erwin Kotler and back in 2022, praising Erwin Kotler, and the fact that she hasn't mentioned the terrorism list, she hasn't mentioned Foreign Enlistment Act, she hasn't mentioned Canadians with War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity Act, she hasn't mentioned Operation Protest, she hasn't mentioned a whole bunch of important Canadian contributions to Palestinian dispossession. So writing that, I have people saying, "Oh, you're being sectarian or divisive by doing it." I mean, what's the point of a leadership race? What's, you know, like, this is exactly what you're supposed to do, is you have different views of the world. You demarcate them by raising them. There's nothing, if you read what I've written, there's nothing mean-spirited. There are fundamental disagreements. And in fact, on Palestine, Heather McPherson is, you know, closer to going in the right direction. If you actually look at all the other major foreign policy issues, she's, you know, full throttle in alignment with the U.S. empire, be it from China to Ukraine to Iran, Haiti. Iran, she, you know, recently she shifted a little bit with the Israeli-U.S. bombing, but she, for the last couple of years, she's been a real hawk on Iran. So this is exactly, to my mind, what, you know, the whole point of a leadership race. But yeah, they don't want a wide reigning. They don't want, I don't think they want, they also constrained the timeline of when people can become members. You have to be a member, I believe it's 60 days before the vote, which is longer period than previously. And that's designed to undercut a sort of outsider candidate that would their campaign would be focused on, you know, bringing in new members. So,
like you, that's exactly where you are, right? I mean,
exactly.
Oh, let's talk about this in a sec. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Engler. Eve's an activist, author, disruptor. He's a parent, a practitioner of political conscience. He's written a dozen books and countless essays on Canada's foreign policy and its perfidious history therein. We're talking about his announced run for the leadership of the federal NDP party. The membership, The last I heard, Eve, was that it was in the sort of race period or whatever was going to be between September and March. What are the hurdles to me becoming a member and supporting your bid?
Well, we're not pushing people to become members right now. That's not the push. We're going to wait till the race formally starts. We are gathering people's supporters information on the website eveforndpleader.ca. And ultimately, what people need to do is become a member of the NDP. And then when the vote arises in March, vote for my candidacy. And there's a couple different kind of classes of membership. The cheapest one is $5, so it's not a particularly big financial outlay. And
what do they have a class system within their membership?
It's more that there's like an unwaged. I think that the NDP on this one.
It's not a political caste system there, where
you get two votes if you pay more or anything like that. So that's it. But at this point, what we're doing is getting our infrastructure in order, the volunteer infrastructure, getting the fundraising infrastructure in order, and also making lots of noise, because my assessment is that there's going to be an effort to try to vet out the candidacy. And so we want to make that as difficult as possible politically for the NDP brass to do that, to just sort of do it quietly or just have it. And one of the ways we've done this is by raising like Heather McPherson, who's widely viewed as the sort of candidate of the establishment. I've never stood up to celebrate. A former literal Nazi, someone who pledged allegiance to Adolf Hitler, like McPherson did, of course, in the House of Commons with Yaroslav Hanka. I've never met with a leading proponent of Israel's Holocaust in Gaza as McPherson has. Well, I guess I have met with some, but I haven't celebrated them, and I haven't met with them in a positive way, should I say? McPherson's met, done events and praised Erwin Kotler at least a half dozen times. I've never come out publicly for a $35 billion pipeline to enable Canada's carbon bomb, i.e. the Trans Mountain, which McPherson has publicly supported. In fact, I've subsequently, she also went to the Trilateral Commission in 2022. So if you're going to start talking about vetting out a candidate, there's much stronger grounds to block Heather McPherson from running in the leadership race than there is to block me from running. So we want to lay the groundwork politically to make it very difficult for the NDP to just stop the candidacy. And so part of the making noise is it's campaigning, it's gathering attention to the campaign, it's getting the ideas out too. It's not just, I'm putting forward that we need economic democracy. We need a replacement for capitalism. Is that going to come tomorrow? I don't know, but we have to at least start thinking about this. The same thing with the tar sands. I've already come out and said, the tar sands need to be shut down immediately, phased out. Is that in 2 years? Is that 5 years? What the specifics? But we have to be putting that forward as a big picture idea, and then you all then build political power behind that idea. So trying to raise consciousness on a bunch of different issues. So at this moment, what we're trying to get people there's a volunteer kit that's been created, and offers people different ways of assisting the campaign, kind of in a bit of an autonomous way. We have different committees to set up and volunteers for the different committees. So if people want to do that, they can check that out on the website eveforndpleader.ca. Also my website, you can see it. So at this point, we're basically trying to raise awareness of the campaign, compile people's emails specifically, but their information more generally. So when the campaign formally starts, we're well positioned to do everything from attain the financial threshold to sign up, you know, many members to actually win the vote, and to just, you know, do as much campaigning and as much consciousness raising as possible.
Well, your caution is well-founded, as anybody in British Columbia can attest. In the last NDP leadership race for the provincial party here, Anjali Appadure was iced out at the last minute, and they cited the NDP leadership or establishment at the time that there were improprieties with signing up members, and their membership drive was used. She was famously pro-Palestine, and it led the way to just a coronation of our current premier, who has been a massive disappointment to anybody holding the traditional, I'll call them, NDP political views. So yeah, it is. It's well that you're cautious about that. Eve, we're fast out of time. I hope, and I'm pretty confident, we'll get to speak again over the next months as your candidacy continues. I hope you don't get to be too much of a big shot to come on Guerrilla Radio once you're in the big time and all that. But before we go, Eve, can you reiterate how people can find out more about the candidacy and get involved?
The simple one is to go to my website, which has a link to eveengler.com, which has a link to the campaign website and a little bit about the candidacy, or just to go to eveforndpleader.ca. And also people should keep tuning into Guerrilla Radio for subsequent updates on on where the campaign is.
Maybe next time, Eve, we can talk about domestic policy, because you have it hands down over Heather McPherson, certainly, and Avi Lewis, I imagine. But domestically, there's a lot of issues. Bill C-5 is a big one that is being challenged by a bunch of First Nations, nine different bands. But it affects all Canadians, and this whole new era under Carney that we're moving into, which is very worrying. Thanks a lot, Eve, for coming on again, though, and good luck.
Thanks for having me.
My great pleasure. Stay tuned. I'm going to be back with Dan Kovalik after the break. We're going to talk about what's going on in Bogota, Colombia right now with this Hague group and their meetings addressing the situation in Palestine. Thanks again, Eve.
Thanks.
Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone.
Before this moment, but especially since then, the Western world's governments have supported the killing of children by Israeli soldiers without fail every day, gunning them down with weapons made in the UK. Palestine Action formed to try to end these arms sales that the courts could not defend. The courts could not defend them, so the parliament became the vehicle to support the bombing of the tents, which needs to be supported. So says the British state, aside from 26 MPs who failed to conflate supporting terrorism with opposing Israeli crimes by those who think we're living in some very scary times, where it is now against the law to express sympathy with those who would destroy corporate property. Illegal to say with eyes open wide, I support Palestine Action, I oppose genocide. International law, along with UK law as well, forbids such weapon sales to countries like Israel. That is, countries that are committing crimes of war are not allowed to import, no access to the store. But in London and Berlin, they just look the other way at those inconvenient laws. There's a new one today, solidarity imprisoned and vilified if you support Palestine Action and oppose genocide. as we bear witness to this constant slaughter, depriving Gaza of food and water, bombing children day and night, where body parts strewn are in hourly sight. The authorities take aim and then crack down on those who dare dissent in London town, who must stand up, not stand aside, who support Palestine action and oppose genocide. Prisons, or will we disappear? Have a Spartacus moment or a time of fear? Back down and go home, or stand with humanity, support